On the Radar, an Eagle News program that takes you beyond the streets and brings you closer to national and international breaking news as it unfolds. Tune in every Monday to Friday from 1 to 2:30.
Good afternoon, Namibia. You are tuned in to another edition of On the Radar. I am your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and for the next hour and a half, I'll be keeping you informed, engaged, and connected to the stories shaping our nation and the world. Welcome to On the Radar. Today, the second of June 2025, and it's a Monday, and just like that, we've officially stepped into the middle of the year. Now, if you've been searching for a show that breaks down current social, economic, and community issues, then look no further. On the Radar is your daily guide to what matters most, from breaking news to trending topics. We're live every weekday, Monday to Friday, from 1300 hours up until 1430. And remember, your voice matters. You can join the conversation at any time by calling us in studio on 083-288-401. Now, whether it's a comment, a question, or a contribution, we are listening and ready to engage with you. Now that we are all settled in, let's jump right in today's headlines. Starting off with our headlines for today, Namibia has been offered an opportunity to have a stake in Angola's Lobito refinery, but has not made it clear whether it will take up the offer or not to this date. Now, currently, talks are weighing in on Namibia considering to partner up with Botswana to build a refinery. Should Namibia buy a stake in the Lobito refinery or partner up with Botswana to build a refinery? Which could be the best route for Namibia to take at this juncture? And what factors could guide its decision? Well, we caught up with economics Abednego Ekanjo to guide us through this. Take a listen. Good afternoon, Mr. Abednego Ekanjo, and welcome to On the Radar News Bulletin.
Afternoon, Happy. Thank you for hosting me.
It's a pleasure. Now, it's been said that Namibia has been offered a stake in the Lobito refinery by Angola, but has been lingering around that. What could be the potential reasons why Namibia has not yet made its decision or made it clear that it's interested in the Lobito refinery?
Yeah, thank you for that. Obviously, you are correct. Namibia has been approached by Angola to consider the acquisition of shares in the Lobito refinery.
Mm-hmm.
But those engagements are still ongoing.
Yeah.
Because obviously for Namibia, it will then require a financial investment into that project. And as you know, refineries are very, very expensive projects to set up. So as a country, you also need to prioritize. We have a lot of issues that require finances.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to carefully consider the financials of that project to see if you were to invest as a country into that project, how do the returns look like?
Yeah.
So your decision as a country to allocate funds to that project will be based on the returns from that project.
Mm-hmm.
But what I can confirm is that those engagements are still ongoing.
Okay. Now, what benefits could we see for Namibia should they buy a stake in the Lobito refinery?
Obviously, big investments, big returns. So that's the obvious advantage of acquiring shares in that refinery. But obviously, for projects like that, you might see you do the investment today and the returns will be coming to you maybe in 5, 7 years or 10 years' time. So this projects of this nature, which require big investments, you do not really see returns immediately. But in the long term, that's when you expect to benefit Once you have paid off your initial costs of investment, and then the project starts profiting, paying off. So those returns are long-term returns. Should we as a country acquire shares in that project?
Yeah. Now, what of Botswana? It is said that the Namibian government is considering to partner up with Botswana to build a refinery. Is this something that is feasible?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good idea for two countries or two nations to come together and think about allocating funds for a project such as a refinery. In terms of feasibility, obviously it will require you to conduct a feasibility study.
Yeah.
To say that if the Namibian and Botswana government were to allocate funds to set up a refinery, will that refinery be feasible? So that question of feasibility will be answered by first conducting a feasibility study to determine the required amount of investment as well as the anticipated returns from that investment.
Mm. Now, could this partnership of Botswana and Namibia building a refinery, could this partnership be a success for both countries, or could it be a project that we see waste taxpayers' money?
Yeah, definitely it could be a success if it is well thought out and well planned. Because with the Namibia's own discoveries of crude oil, you do not want to send that crude oil to Asia or to Europe or wherever to be refined. Ideally, you would want to refine your own crude oil. So it's something that could pay off for the two countries and benefit the populations of the two countries. If it is well carefully planned and carefully executed, such a project can be very beneficial for the two countries.
Mm-hmm. What advice would you give, given an opportunity, what advice would you give to the Namibian government in terms of building up a refinery project, partnering up with Botswana?
Yeah, obviously, the advice will center around costs and benefits. So before allocating funds to such a massive project, because refineries are not easy projects to finance, they are not easy projects to construct, and they are not easy projects to run once you have set it up. So you need to conduct a proper feasibility study to iron out all these issues. Because, for example, if you don't have offtake agreements in place, you build your refinery, you produce your fuel, and then there's no one to buy that fuel because you don't have offtake agreements in place. So all these things need to be carefully considered through feasibility studies, etc., making arrangements for offtake agreements, etc., so that once you allocate funds to that project and it starts running, you know exactly the anticipated returns from that project. So the comfort for government should really be based on the results of conducting a proper feasibility study.
Yeah. From your perspective, which one would be better? Partnering up with Botswana to build a refinery project, or buying a stake in an already established refinery, such as the Lobito Refinery of Angola?
Yeah, I mean, it all depends on the expected returns from either project. So whichever project has the highest returns, I think that's the project which is best suited for you to allocate funds to. So depending on the results of the feasibility study for a refinery between Namibia and Botswana, and also considering the financials related to Namibia acquiring shares in the Lobito refinery and the expected returns from that project. So you now have to weigh your two options to say, okay, if I allocate funds to Lobito, I expect to receive, for example, $500 million over this period of time. However, should I allocate funds to Namibia, Botswana, I expect maybe $1 billion or something. So based on those financials, the expected returns of either project, you then base your decision based on that.
Now, there's also the Dangote refinery in Nigeria. Why are African countries not making use of it?
Yeah, in terms of the Dangote refinery, it was mainly constructed to serve the Nigerian market.
Yeah.
Remember, the Nigerian population is something around 200 million people. So it's a very, very huge market. So that refinery was specifically built to serve the Nigerian market. And obviously the neighbors, they're in West Africa. So, and that's why you don't really see the rest of other countries, East Africa, Southern Africa, etc., are not really buying fuel from the Dangote River because it was mainly set up to serve the Nigerian market and neighboring countries in West Africa.
Now, the Dangote refinery has made quite huge progress over the years. What can African countries learn from it?
Yeah, we can definitely benchmark from the good practices of the Dangote refinery. And especially with these types of projects where big investments need to be made, it's always best that you benchmark with your friends. You can contact the Nigerian government to say that there's Namibia, we want to benchmark with the Dangote refinery. So those engagements or those relations can be established. So you learn from the best practices of the Dangote experience.
Yeah, absolutely. Mr. Abednego, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reading News Bulletin.
Oh, you are welcome. And no worries.
Okay. And while we're still talking about refineries and fuel, well, fuel prices are set to go down beginning Wednesday. Domestic fuel prices will decrease for June, effective from Wednesday, this coming Wednesday, as announced by the Ministry of Industries, Mines and Energy. Now, this is after an over-recovery, which is the difference between domestic fuel prices and import prices in both petrol and diesel varieties. Therefore, the price of petrol will decrease by 30 cents per liter and the prices of both diesel variants, that is diesel 50 ppm and diesel 10 ppm, will decrease by 70 cents per liter. With that being said, we pause here, take a trip to the marketplace, but don't go anywhere. We still have a lot more coming your way right here on the Reader News Bulletin.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events. And basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the I.
Welcome back. In other news, the African Development Bank has released its African Economic Outlook for 2025, highlighting a modest improvement in the continent's economic performance. Africa's real GDP growth rose from 3.0% in 2023 to 3.3% in 2024, which was driven largely by public spending and household consumption in more than half of the continent's countries. However, new global trade tensions, particularly tariffs imposed by the United States and resulting retaliatory measures, have led to a downward revision of growth forecasted for the 2025 and 2026 year. Now, growth is now projected at 3.9% and 4.0% respectively, compared to earlier estimates of 4.1% and 4.4%. Now, despite this setback, the report indicates that 21 African countries are expected to exceed 5% growth in 2025. However, Ethiopia, Niger, Rwanda, and Senegal are forecasted to reach or surplus 7%, considered a threshold for inclusive and sustainable development. Regional projections vary, with East Africa expected to lead at 5.9%, while Southern Africa lags behind. Now, the report attributes ongoing challenges to regional instability, inflationary pressures, climate shocks, and high debt-saving costs. Inflation is forecasted to ease from 18.7% in 2024 to 13.8% in 2025, and below 10% by 2026. Meanwhile, fiscal deficits are expected to average 4.5% of GDP, reflecting increased infrastructure investment. Although external financial flows saw a recovery in 2023, they face renewed pressure from declining donor support and market volatility. The continent's debt levels remain high, with 70% of external debt held in US dollars. Now, the bank emphasizes the need for structural reforms, including better public financial management, enhanced tax systems, and implementation of the African Continental Free Trade Area to support long-term economic resilience and integration. So what could be the key drivers behind this growth? With four countries projected for a 7% growth in 2025, what can other African countries copy, in simpler terms, in their approach to actually grow their GDP? Well, with that, we caught up with Mbusi Mabuku for a further discussion. Let's take a listen. Good afternoon, Mvuvusi Mabuku, and welcome to On the Radar News Bulletin.
Good afternoon.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you.
Now, the African Development Bank has released its African Economic Outlook for the 2025 year. which highlights a modest improvement in the continent's economic performance, with Africa's real GDP growth rising from 3.0% in 2023 to 3.3% in 2024. Now, what do you believe are the key drivers behind the modest growth of 3.3% recorded in Africa's economy for the year 2024?
Yes, no, it's several factors that contributed to the growth that is projected for, I mean, that achieved in 2024, because the it was driven by strong government spending in many countries, and then as well as a pickup in private consumption. So generally, growth itself has been quite broad-based. And because if you look at the report, it's saying growth about 29 countries of the 54 African countries, that is about 54%, they realized the significant growth.
Mm-hmm.
And then in addition to that, saying 10 African countries, which include the likes of Angola, Ghana, Niger, Uganda, realized growth which increased by more than 1 percentage point between 2023 and 2024.
Mm-hmm.
So by and large, these are some of the factors that contributed to, the growth, modest growth of 3.3%.
Yeah.
2024, yes.
Okay. Now, with global trade tensions affecting Africa's exports, how can countries protect their economies?
Yes, this is always quite a challenging one. However, be that as it may, those trade tensions basically present an opportunity for African countries to further diversify their trading partners while also deepening international trade, inter-regional trade, mm-hmm. and strengthening the economic diversification and regional integration. And all these are even in aligned to the African Continental Free Trade Area.
Yeah.
So basically, the growing trade wars, they provide an incentive for African countries to fully implement the African Continental Free Trade Area Agreement and also operationalize other long-standing agreements to eliminate regional trade and non-trade barriers, while also accelerating economic diversification.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. And so in light of all these factors, African countries, basically, for them, should look at diversifying their export markets.
Yeah.
More like saying, you can't put all your eggs in one basket. So basically, mm-hmm. they could redirect their trade towards intra-regional markets within Africa, as you know that trade within ourselves as African countries is very minimal.
Yeah.
So maybe that is an area that we should explore, and also looking at other potential trade partners in Asia, Canada, Latin America, the Middle East, the European Union, and other European countries.
Mm-hmm. Now, the report projects that only 4 African countries may reach the 7% growth threshold in 2025. What could those countries be doing differently, and can their approaches be replicated elsewhere by other countries?
Yes, they mentioned the 4 countries being Ethiopia, Niger, Rwanda, and Senegal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's saying, you see, if you look at Ethiopia, for example, the non-resource intensive economy,
yeah.
meaning they're neither an oil exporter or other resource intensive economy. So basically, for them, the resilient growth is basically projected, resilient growth is underpinned by massive public and private investments
mm-hmm.
to deepen domestic value chains in agriculture and energy,
infrastructure. And also, the country has undertaken important financial sector reforms, thereby allowing for some degree of exchange rate flexibility and assigning a greater role to the private sector in the economy.
Yeah.
So meaning they made sure that, you know, they're looking at making sure that the private sector is driving the growth, the economy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So those measures have been complemented by efforts to boost trade and tourism, while also modernization strategies to enhance productivity in agriculture and agro-processing to boost exports of high-value crops.
Yeah.
But then for Niger, Niger is other resource-intensive economy, which basically just translates to saying minerals, basically the about mineral exports are above 25% of total exports.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So for them, the estimated growth is to be driven by a full commencement of the oil and gas production. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that is also the same even with Senegal. And then other factors are the combined effects of strong domestic demand and sustained public and private investment.
Okay.
And Niger, they're also benefiting from the ramping up of oil production and increased financing for of infrastructure. But Rwanda, on the other hand, which is a non-resource intensive economy, the 7.8% growth projected for 2025 is expected to be driven by agriculture and services on the supply side and public sector construction on the demand side.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's saying this growth is not atypical and sustains.
Taking flights has never been easier. Paratus is introducing SkyFi internet packages with speeds that will have you reaching for your seatbelt. Starting from $500 million, excluding VAT, per month, with speeds reaching up to 10 megabits per second. There's even a prepaid option where you can top up your SkyFi internet for just $15 million per gigabyte. No contracts, no fuss. Visit your nearest Paratus branch to find out more. Or go to paratus.africa/Namibia to sign up online. Always
Paratus. Welcome back. And now we do return with our conversation with Mumvusi Mavuku.
19.
Mm-hmm. And this
and
could be...
This could be attributed to continued strong public expenditure on mega projects, as well as improvements in tourism infrastructure and investment to enhance technology, innovation, and mobility.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then last and not least, it's Senegal, a non-resource intensive economy. The estimated growth is to be driven by a full commencement of the oil and gas production and combined effects of strong domestic demand and sustained public and private investment. So also, last and not least, the projected growth will be buoyed by the commencement of the oil and gas exports from the Greater Togo project. Overall, their policies could indeed be replicated by peer countries, depending on the economic characteristics and context.
Mm-hmm.
Realizing also that, you know, there's no one size fits all,
mm-hmm.
because each country has its own economic
challenges.
Characteristics.
Also, mm-hmm.
and challenges. Yes.
Mm.
Yeah.
Now, many African governments are struggling with debt. How could they keep investing in infrastructure as well as power without borrowing too much?
Yes, this has really been an issue for most African countries. But first and foremost, what they should look at is first to look at diversifying the funding sources. So there they could look at exploring initiatives such as triple P, public-private partnerships. Mm-hmm. That is one area that they could they could look at. And then when we talk about diversifying funding sources, it means also it touches on, maybe that could also be an additional factor, to look at some tax or fiscal policy reforms, so that at least, you see, what is critical is that at least you attain, these African countries, they attain efficiency in terms of revenue collection.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you look at some statistics available, you realize that the revenue collection is not at the expected level. You see that some countries, the collection is quite low. Even as a percentage of GDP, you see that it's below 30%, for example, which is not really ideal. And then they could also, the other thing they could look at is basically leveraging private investment. That is quite critical.
Mm-hmm.
They should promote domestic investment while also trying to look at attracting foreign direct investment.
Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So the other issue is also just to make sure that at least the debt that is there is well managed, and then look for some relief. Yeah.
Okay. Now, the African Continental Free Trade Area is highlighted as a strategic opportunity, and you've also spoken about it within our conversation. Now, what progress has been made in its implementation, and what barriers still exist that need be done away with so that it can fully leverage its potential?
Okay. Yes, in terms of the achievements, I think they've been several significant ones. One, you could start by, say, looking at the increase in the number of countries actively trading under the AFCFTA regime.
Mm-hmm.
That is quite a significant achievement, because now it means all member states, they agree to the ideals of the AFCFTA.
Yeah.
So meaning this is one way where we can improve in terms of, you know, trading with each other as Africans. And then you talk about the launch of the guided trade initiative, the GTI, which basically facilitates the flow of goods among African countries. That in itself, that vehicle has expanded participation from 7 countries to about 39 countries as we speak in this year.
Mm.
Yeah. So this is quite a significant milestone in terms of the implementation of the AFCFTA regime. Because you see, most of the challenges are to do with the fact that we hardly trade with each other as Africans. And that doesn't help. Yeah.
Okay.
So the GTI itself has been particularly successful in terms of facilitating the exchange of value-added goods, and like processed goods and textile among the 39 participating countries. And just to give you an idea also, you will see that the number of certificates of origin issued has increased from 13 in 2022, 13, like 13, to over 2,600, thereby demonstrating the growth of trade activity under the AFCFTA regime.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay.
So these are really, you know, these are indicative of you know, improvement in terms of the implementation of the African Continental Free Trade Area.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then in terms of
challenges.
Barriers. You see, there's still some challenges. It's not really, you know, been 100% smooth sailing. But we say, in terms of the barriers, the finalization of negotiations on the rules of origin, key sectors like the automotive and textile industry, because those are still pending. So because they have not yet been finalized, most of the member countries, they cannot trade, you know, effectively in those sectors.
Mm-hmm.
And then also the issue to do with the harmonization of trade laws and the removal of barriers to free movement across the borders. Those remain critical to the success of the African continental free trade area.
Mm-hmm.
Because you see that some trade laws are still not yet harmonized, meaning they're not speaking the same language. They are not aligned to each other.
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes very difficult for member states to trade
with one another.
Yes.
And lastly, what can Namibia adapt from this whole document or from this report? How should Namibia implement certain things so that its GDP can actually increase and benefit the Namibian people?
Yes, Namibia can leverage from the report, learning from you know other countries, but also just remember that in terms of like the African continental free trade area, Namibia has been one of those countries which has been you know at the forefront in terms of ensuring the implementation of the African continental free trade area. You see that in addition to that, as a country, we are trying also to make sure that at least we revive our economy, because the good growth period ended in 2015. So between 2010 and 2015, that's where we registered very good growth. But then now we are trying to revive and to get to those levels of growth. So by saying that, I'm also indicating that as a country for now, as you may be aware, we are busy now crafting the National Development Plan, the sixth National Development Plan, NDP-6, led by the National Planning Commission.
Mm-hmm.
This is a critical document for a six-year period that will, you know, even highlight the key priority areas going forward into the last 6 years remaining from the Vision 2030. So there's still other initiatives which are still being crafted together with the different stakeholders within the economic sphere.
Yeah.
So I believe there are some valuable lessons we can learn from the report,
mm-hmm.
but then other efforts are really ongoing. Yes.
Okay. Mr. Mavuku, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reader News Bulletin and educating us and drawing further insights from this report.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Okay. And there you had it from Mvusisi Mavuku, who is executive at Executive Economic Statistics at the Namibia Statistics Agency. Now, with that being said, let's pause here and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back with yet more news. And remember, you can also be part of the news bulletin. All you have to do is dial the number in studio 083-288-401 is the number in studio, and you can share your opinions or contributions right here. See you after the break.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Welcome back. In other news, the National Council Standing Committee on Economics and Public Accounts has released its report on industrial development initiatives in 5 Namibian regions. Karas, Otsonjuba, Zambezi, Kavango West, and Oshana. The report issued on 20th May focuses on agricultural processing projects aimed at advancing Namibia's industrialization agenda through the agricultural sector. Now, according to the committee, with this, agro-processing projects are commendable efforts by the state to uplift living standards and improve the country's socio-economic conditions, several challenges have hindered their impact. The projects are implemented in the communities for the purpose of uplifting the living standards of the people, but some end up not serving the purpose as there are no activities taking place at the project sites, while some are vandalized and abandoned, the report states. My colleague, Joseph Jeremiah, caught up with Ephraim Shimbali on this. Let's take a listen.
Good afternoon. This is Joseph Jeremiah speaking from Eagle FM. Here in the studio, I'm joined by an agricultural analyst, Mr. Shimbali. Good afternoon to you.
Yes, good afternoon, Joseph. How are you doing? Afternoon to your listeners, too. Thank you for giving me the platform.
Okay, sir. We live in a country where we have state-run agro-processing projects, often face challenges leading to mixed results. Some win and some fail. One of our country's biggest problems is being available to develop a productive agro-processing. For some people that do not understand what agro-processing is, could you perhaps give us an introduction on that?
Okay, thank you, Joseph. Agro-processing is mostly about the process of adding value to your agricultural product, whereby we talk of growing your agricultural product, and this does not only include plants, it also includes things like fisheries and, anything that includes farming with respect to agriculture.
Yes.
Adding value on those products that you are farming. That's more of what agro-processing is all about.
Okay, sir.
Yes.
So, what are the main challenges limiting agro-processing development in Namibia's state-run projects?
From a personal observation, I would say the state capacity is capacitating the state. It's one of the big challenges that are happening at the moment. If you look very well to what's happening in the industry, is that the private sector is doing good in terms of agro processing because they have the expertise and there are people that are really committed there with accountability. If you look at our state, mostly the state plant or the projects that are happening now, the people are out there within the community. And it's Namibians that are working for the private sector. But the state is not capacitated enough to ensure that they run all these facilities or the projects and ensure that we develop from the first stage to the final stage, whereby we ensure that we capture the economic growth within our project. So it's more of ensuring that the state is capacitated, they have targets, And we ensure that we have accountability within the employees, because the state is one of a kind whereby anything that goes wrong, no one is blamed for.
Mm.
So there's no capacity and there's no one that's being blamed for anything that goes wrong. So it's more of ensuring that you capacitate the state and get people in there. Make the people are in there and working as they do in the private sector and ensure that there is accountability within the system.
Mm.
I would say that's the main challenge that's happening now.
Okay. So we have seen that there are projects where people tend to implement measures like they have people, they always start from the ground, because it's the ground where we believe for something to rise, it has to start from the ground.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. So now my question is, how can rural agro-processing centers be better equipped and supported to stimulate economic growth?
Okay, that's a good question. Yeah, we need to ground our agro-processing. What do I mean by grounding it? Mm. If you look at Namibia as a country, we have land quite enough to feed everyone. But what we do in Namibia, it's mostly, we are mostly on a small scale of privatization, our agro-processing. So it's more of effluent farming just during the rainy season, and then you cut it off there, and you only produce for yourself to eat, and then the rest that you don't really want to eat, you sell. But this a need, the government needs to do a proper planning whereby number one, best solution will be for the government to do plantations or any project within all the constituencies in our country. Let's take, for example, crop plantation, whereby you come up with plantations or projects within every constituency in your country, or we scout out the most suitable areas where we have fertile land or where we have water available enough. And then that is where you start. And you have to get the community involved into the processing of this project to ensure that they are run from the basic concept of involving the community to ensure that it's your people that are running the economy, to ensure that you are employing people. Get the people in there. The people must start from planting, then they go to harvesting, then they go to packaging and processing and ensuring that you add value. And adding value involves adding in people again, getting machinery, and make sure that you start from your constituencies and do the sales as a government and earn revenue out of it. Then you are going to improve your economy. The other essence will be to assist the community in ensuring that you set a target for your community by providing equipment, by ensuring that they are targeted, empowered producers that feed directly into a governmental body, that feed directly into the governmental body, and the governmental body takes control over that in terms of channeling and in terms of distribution and resource accumulation, or in terms of revenue accumulation. Then the government can have enough money to redistribute again into the community and ensure that the economy grows. I would say that those are some of the fundamental concepts that our governmental bodies need to take into the project of agro-processing so that we can grow the economy from the ground.
Okay. Since I heard you spoke about distribution,
Yes.
With regards to distribution, what barriers do small-scale farmers face in assessing markets and meeting export standards within agro-processing?
Okay. If you look at our country at the moment, we are more of depending on distribution by the private sector. Look at where we buy our food. We buy from Pick and Pay. Who is obtaining that money is Pick and Pay and the bosses of Pick and Pay.
Yes.
It's their own, it's the private sector that's getting everything. But what is the government getting out of it? It's a mere profit share or tax. That's all what they are getting.
Mm-hmm.
But what about our government? Because the mistake will be to give the private sector the mandate to run the economy. That will be the problem, because they can do whatever they want and you end up suffering your people. The good option will be the governmental or the governmental bodies to capture the distribution. But how do you capture the distribution? Because you have the authority to ensure that you empower your small-scale farmers.
Mm.
But when there's a competitor that is against your small farmer, what do? You have to limit the channels of their distribution and ensure that they either buy from your small-scale farmer, or you provide a market for them. So there is one. So providing a market for your small-scale farmers is the best option to ensure that you as a government get involved in, let's say, sales. The same way, let's say, what Pick and Pay is doing. How many governmental shops are there that are able to earn revenue for the government, enough revenue for to grow its economy, to make sure that it helps its people? We are talking about nothing, where they are just getting 50%, where they only have 50% share in most of this. But the government needs to control. But they need to control the economy, and this can only come once you capture it and ensure that you are the sole distributor. And then you start getting from your small-scale farmer and also helping them grow, making sure that you set the target from them. Then one day we'll become independent and ensure that our small-scale farmers will come together and supply to one main distributor.
Mm.
So that will be one of my input on that.
Okay. Since you're an analyst, let's say these projects require money from the state.
Yes.
In your view, what should the government do to avoid wasting taxpayer money?
Yes, I see what's happening, especially our procurement system. It's a torture on the taxpayer's money. Because what the government is saying, it's saying it doesn't have capacity to run its economy. So what does it do? It channels out taxpayers' money to private entities as projects, as standards. But what can't you do as a government? Why are you not doing it? They're saying they don't have capacity. Why are you not employing people? Because the private sector is actually employing these graduates that are coming from school. It's the Namibians that are working in this private sector. Why can't you, as a state, you are the source of income. You are giving away your income. Someone manipulates your income. When the money gets out of the coffers of the government, immediately when it gets out to a private sector, a private sector has its own willingness to do whatever they can do with that money. But if it's still within the state coffers, we have that accountability to ensure that that money is still empowered to help the Namibians. But once you give it in the private sector, everyone is going to use it the way they want to. Here's why our projects are not getting done. So what the government needs to do, not to waste the taxpayers' money, employ people within the government so that they can run their own facilities, so they can run their own projects. so that the government can only budget for a fixed income of salary, and then the work runs smoothly. Because you have the money, you just need to pump in the money into the project, and then you have your people that are working as a thing when they finish their work. But the moment they do what they are doing now, whereby they take money out of the coffers, they give it to private people, I'm going to buy my Benz first before I finish that work. because I've gained income that I want. Irregardless of 10 people, 2,000, or even 600, I don't care. I want to get money to go buy my Benz. But you as a government, you have that willingness on your heart to ensure that you provide the service to benefit your people. You have that eagerness to ensure that you give the service to the people. Get in the people within the government. They must work within the center of the finance. They must work within the control of the government to ensure that everything runs smoothly. Because what kills most of the projects? The contractors or the tenderers, the ones that got the tenders, they don't have money to complete the project. But you as a government, you have that money to do the work. So yeah, that's what we need to do. I would say we need to abolish the procurement system. It's not benefiting us. We need to get people in the state to do the work and make sure that funds are available immediately. Just what's happening in potholes in roads. The roads are worn out. What do we need to do? We need to give a tender for the potholes to be resolved. But if you, as a state, have people within your institution that are employed fully to do that work, they can do it immediately and resolve the problem.
And with that being said, we pause here for a commercial break. We'll see you right after.
Onkundana ombwanawa kani hauto. Owa pumbwa oshimaliwa meendelelo. Ndele ouna oshiendiso. Ouna aniilonga ya pumbwa okufutwa. Ashike mboka ina oondjodhoe otaende kashona. Ngele onkalamwenyo otayi nyengana, AutoCash otayi ningi ompu. Tu etela ohauto yoye eto pewa epresente ya 45 dongushu yoshiendiso shoye. Muule ashike wemitete yomilongo 45. Ino pumbwa oka payslip nenge o statement ayombanga. Ohauto yoye ashike. Mona omula oshimaliwa ethimbo weshi pumbwa.
Easy money.
Tu dengera nena ko nora hamano yimwe ne nora nora hamano heari hamano. Ano ko nora hamano yimwe ne nora nora hamano heari hamano. Oshipulera ko AutoCash.
Welcome back. You are tuned into On the Radio News Bulletin right here on Eagle FM. And now we take you to what's making headlines in regards to economic indicators. First up, on agricultural commodities, the top commodity gainers for today are rice at 1.28%, palm oil at 1.26%, and cotton at 0.64%. On metal commodities, the top commodity gainer for today is silver at 1.45% and iron ore at 1.43%, copper at 0.97% and gold at 0.36%. The biggest loser on metal commodities is lithium carbonate at minus 0.98%. Now, on energy commodity, the top commodity gainers for today are crude oil, WTI, at 1.91%, blend crude oil at 1.68% and gasoline at 1.16%. The biggest loser in this category is natural gas, UK GBP at minus 1.59%. South Africa's PPI inflation stood at 0.5% in April 2025, the lowest in 4 months, unchanged from the previous month. The reading was largely influenced by a deeper decline in prices of coke, petroleum, chemical, rubber and plastic products at minus 5.5% versus 4.1% in March. Prices also continued to fall for paper and printed products at 3.5% versus minus 2.4%. And now we pause here and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back with yet more news beyond the, with news beyond the borders. Stay with me.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Oyo mnangeshefa no hara kushivifa oma kuro ye kupitira mohorike radio station ayo Eagle FM. Enya mukuru olongaha. Ninge kwata fano na Monica kushikondosha ipindi konora heta tuimwe heari imwe ne heari imwe imwe no hamano. That is 081-7147-116. Mamberewa konora heta tu natu mbali o heta tu vatatu ne nola no natu. Ninge tumo emaila ku monica@eaglefm.com.na opo umone oshijemo shiri nawa.
Eagle FM, the I. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the I.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Welcome back, and at this point we take you to news beyond the borders. We start off regionally, then we move over to continental news. Thereafter, you can expect some international news. Now, starting off regionally in South Africa, in regards to South Africa's health department, which observed No Tobacco Day session. Let's take a listen.
Today, hosting a world... Well, let's take you back to one of our top stories. The health department is today hosting a World No Tobacco Day session in Midrand, and it's part of, the global fight against tobacco use and its devastating impact on people's health. The Deputy Health Minister, that's Dr. Joe Pasha, is now giving the keynote address at that event. Let's listen in.
That's not required what they were demanding, that this bill must be discussed at NEDLAC clause by clause. There's no such a provision in the NEDLAC Act, but we said that to, we know South Africans are very litigious, and sometimes our courts are also not very helpful, even when you deal with public, issues which are for the good of the public. So we had to make sure that we close all those loopholes. So thanks to Ms. Hunter and the, slogging it out there, for weeks and weeks. I know it was not a very nice, thing to go through that, but very much it's done. The report has now been presented to the committee. So from, in terms of any risk of a legal loophole going, we have closed that loophole. So just to remind you in terms of what that bill caters for, as Nationals has already asked us to do. Plain packaging is covered within that bill. So we want to make sure that we can introduce plain packaging follow on the countries which have already taken the step. I'm happy that also on the African continent, we can learn from some of the countries mentioned, Mauritius, Cote d'Ivoire, I heard you saying so. So we're in good company, we're getting there. We also want to strengthen the prevention of advertising. Already, the loophole there is, I mean, they still, even though in terms of advertising, that the ban on formal media advertising is already there, but there are also forms of advertising, as you have seen, the new products which are not covered. So we want to strengthen that to protect children in this aggressive marketing. We also want to expand smoke-free public areas. The definition currently, just to give you an example, amongst others, we know that currently in public places, like even restaurants, they are allowed to can demarcate a certain percentage of space as a smoking area. So in terms of this this new bill, we will be, once it is passed, we'll be able to do away with that. And essentially, there will be very few, if any, public spaces which will be, you know, permitted to have smoking areas, especially indoor public spaces. But we're also touching also on outdoor as well. Regulate the sale and distribution of these emerging products, because currently they are not covered. All these e-cigarettes and what do you call them? Huckley, bubbly, all those things. We want to make sure that all those can also be properly regulated, because currently, you know, they are everywhere. So we want to also that bill enhance cessation support to help current users quit and improve their health. Of course, throughout the public hearings, the industry has been spending huge amounts of money, sponsoring people to go to the public hearings. Quite embarrassingly sometimes, I know in some of those areas, even members of my own organization, party who, we are leading in terms of this bill, having been the party responsible in government. But in some public hearings, we had reports that even the members of our own organization were sponsored, and some of them even holding leadership positions were actually sponsored, and they went and promoted and spoke against the bill, which comes from, sponsored by their own party and organization. And that's
still on health matters. South Africa records 2,000 club foot cases annually.
At least 2,000 children are born every year with club foot in South Africa. And if left untreated, a child will lead a life of disability. This is according to STEPS. It's an organization that offers support to parents and caregivers in taking care of babies born with a club foot. The causes of this congenital birth condition are still unknown, and it is estimated that it affects 1 in 500 births. Now, this morning in our Health Matters segment, we take a closer look at what is clubfoot and the treatment involved. And joining us is Karen Moss. She's the founder of STEPS. Karen, thank you very much for joining us. It's good to have you here on the program.
Good morning, Leanne.
Let's start off with absolute pleasure. Let's start off with the basics. What is clubfoot?
Well, clubfoot is a condition that's present at birth, so it's congenital. It's as you said, the cause is not known, but physically what clubfoot is when the foot is either one or both feet are turned over and pointed inwards towards the body in a rigid position. With the foot in this position, if it's left untreated, the child will end up having to walk on the side or top of the feet and is unable to wear shoes. So it becomes a permanent disability. However, there is a way to treat clubfoot, And that's why we have these awareness campaigns, is to educate the public about the options that are out there to treat clubfoot effectively, so, and therefore not have disability.
According to a couple of your numbers, you say that at least 2,000 children are born every year with clubfoot in South Africa. You know, what steps should health workers take when a baby is suspected to have been born with clubfoot? How do they manage that?
Well, the best, it would be somebody who's obviously working in antenatal, you know, maternity clinics and that type of thing. The most important thing is to get that child in for a referral so that they can be properly diagnosed. Sometimes it looks like a clubfoot, but it's not. If the foot's slightly turned in because of maybe not having enough space while the mother was pregnant. But you will always see the difference because it's, you know, not so rigid. However, there are referral channels. We are noticing that having been involved in this for many years, those are improving. But health workers should know that they should always encourage the parents to go straight to an orthopedic facility and preferably one of the specialist clinics. That there's 48 around the country that we are supporting in the state health sector, still not reaching everywhere. But the sooner a child is diagnosed and the earlier they become treatment, the quicker and simpler it is to treat. Mm-hmm. What is the problem is when it's not identified and we then have children being picked up at 3-4 years old, and it's a much more complicated process, and it takes much longer and is obviously hard on the child. So I would say for health workers, if you would like to know any more information about clubfoot, we do have a one-pager, which is a lot of information about how to identify it and referral channels, and you're very welcome to either contact us or download it off our website.
Yeah. I'm reading some frightening statistics that you've supplied to us. It's basically saying South Africa's black population has the second highest rate of clubfoot incidents in the world, an estimated 1 in 500 live births. Perhaps yes. Elaborate a bit more on this.
Well, the world average, it varies between 1 in 750 and 1 in 800, but there have been studies done in South Africa, particularly when it's looking at our black population, that there is a high incidence. And it is known that there's certain areas of the world that either have a lower or higher incidence. For example, Japan is much lower, whereas parts of other countries may be higher even than us. But it has been identified in some studies. However, we're not really sure, because this is something that is still being identified with stats. There aren't enough stats being collected. We belong to a global umbrella organization called Global Clubfoot Initiative. It's got many members from all around countries in the LMIC and middle income countries. And we're starting to collect data, and it's actually becoming very interesting, because soon we will know within a few years what is the real incidence. But we've based that number on studies done in South Africa.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, in Zambia, full price cuts to end consumers, 1 billion. Let me get the right. 1 billion kwacha in savings.
Consumers across the country are set to save nearly 1 billion kwacha following sustained cuts in fuel pump prices over the last few months. Okay. Energy expert Johnston Chikwanda says in the month of June alone, consumers will save approximately 350 million kwacha due to reduced prices of petrol and diesel. Dr. Chikwanda says the recent reduction in fuel prices is expected to translate into major economic relief for Zambians.
This is a significant amount of saving, which is going to give relief to the consumers of fuel. And even business houses, which have been depending on diesel gensets to power their operations because of the ongoing energy crisis.
Yesterday, the Energy Regulation Board reduced the pump price of diesel from 27 kwacha 38 ngwe to 25 kwacha 12 ngwe, petrol from 32 kwacha 14 ngwe to 31 kwacha 36 ngwe, and kerosene from 26 kwacha 88 ngwe to 24 kwacha 79 ngwe. Economics Association of Zambia National Secretary Nicholas Mainza expects the reduction in fuel prices to lead to a decrease in the cost of basic needs.
You know, the cost of bread, the cost of all these basic needs, it's always impacted, always affected by the cost of fuel. Why? Because there could be some production of these basic needs, but then the transportation of these same products from point A to point B requires mobility, and there's always an impact from fuel.
Meanwhile, the Republican Progressive Party has commended government for a series of positive policy developments that has led to the reduction.
Thanks to strategic policies such as the open access model to the Tazama pipeline, which has introduced healthy competition in the oil procurement processes.
The consensus among stakeholders is that the fuel price reduction is a step in the right direction, and that the development will impact the broader economy and the lives of ordinary Zambians in the coming months. Rosemary Kamanga, ZNBC News, Lusaka.
Conflict in Sudan leaves millions of children hungry and out of school.
People across Sudan are in the middle of one of the world's worst humanitarian crises. Thousands have been killed and millions displaced as conflict rakes across the country. The shockwaves from Sudan's brutal war cut across generations. But it's the children who have been hardest hit by the conflict that's now in its third year.
Over 17 million Sudanese children are out of school. 5,000 have been kidnapped or missing. And 3,000 have died in the war, according to Sudan's National Council for Child Welfare.
The United Nations says it has found evidence of violence against children in Sudan reaching extreme levels in 2023. A UN report highlights a 21% increase in grave violations against children that year. The report places several entities on the blacklist for killing and maiming children and for carrying out attacks on schools and hospitals.
So if we look at before the war, we had 7 million children out of school. Since the war, we have 17 million children who are not in schools. Again, if we look at the data before the war, we knew that around 3 million children are acutely malnourished. Now, since the war, we're looking at almost close to 4 million children acutely malnourished.
Child abuse has worsened since the conflict started in Sudan. Verified reports show children have been forcibly recruited as fighters, and cases of sexual abuse and slavery have increased.
We verified tens of cases of children who were forced by the RSF to join the conflict. Some of them have returned to their families and some were killed in the conflict. Many were kidnapped. The scale of the violence is large and scary. We need huge collaboration in order to prevent a bigger crisis.
International efforts to mediate an end to the conflict in Sudan have not yielded much. Across the country, millions continue to suffer the impact of the continuing violence. For children across Sudan, an end to the conflict can't come soon enough. Every day brings with it new challenges and more suffering. But like many children in other conflict zones, they too hope that peace will be restored in their country so that they can once again just be children and enjoy learning and playing as they used to before. Neba Muhiddin, CGTN, Port Sudan.
Kip Keino Classics shines in Nairobi with record-breaking performances.
The 6th Absa Kip Keino Classic has delivered another spectacular display of speed, strength and power as global stars lit up Nairobi's Ulinzi Sports Complex. The one-day World Athletics Continental Tour Gold Series event brought out some of the brightest names in the sport, and they did not disappoint. Canadian Olympic champion Ethan Katzberg defended his title in a world-leading 82.73 meters as several meet records tumbled on the day.
First throw, it was very gentle. I think gentle is a good word, but it was 81.60 something. So I was like, okay, what am I doing throwing 81.60 very, you know, soft and reserved. And then I kind of knew I had to go for it, and I, you know, tried to build off of that, and thankfully I hit the 82.73. You know, just a couple technical changes in the moment there, and I was able to produce a good result. as soon as I saw that nine, I was stoked. I mean, I've been trying to dip on a nine for ages now, this whole season, but to be able to actually do it is surreal. I mean, yeah, I'm just blessed.
It feels like an honor, you know, to actually come and represent South Africa in the great land of Kenya, you know. I always wanted to come here. It is my first time here, and it's my first time in the, like, this felt like a real major competition. I felt the pressure. I felt that, you know, it's going to be rough today, you know. So I'm truly happy to be here, and I truly love Kenya.
Even though I got some, like, injured, then I was like, no, I want to go to Kenya. I know this. It's where I can get my time. So definitely I'm here. I ran a national record. It's super fast. I'm super good.
From Olympic champions to homegrown talent, the crowd enjoyed every moment as they soaked in world-class track and field action unfolding before them.
The crowd is unbelievable. They're very passionate about athletics and sports in general. So, you know, to be able to come down here and, you know, I just want to, you know, bring the world athletics to everybody. So being able to do that, and, you know, the stadium's full, everybody's cheering. It's a very, very enjoyable time.
The 2025 Kip Keino Classic has once again shown why Nairobi is a key stop on the athletics global calendar, with the passionate Kenyan crowd making it all the more special. For the athletes, the road to Tokyo is still very much alive as they continue their push to meet qualification standards for the World Championships. Mohamed Abubakar for CGTN, Nairobi.
Zimbabwe turns to digital tools to prevent elephant crop raids.
2024, 16 elephants in Wange National Park had GPS tracking collars fitted around their necks. The gadgets are now providing hourly updates on their movements. The data is useful for conservationists trying to preserve a habitat that is under pressure due to the growing animal population.
16 is really a good number because if you fit one collar in a head of 10, on average, which is basically the average head size of elephants, so we are basically tracking the movement of probably 160 elephants plus. There's also a human wildlife conflict lens to it, where we want to assist communities to detect possibilities of conflict early.
Villages in communal areas adjacent to the park have frequently had their crops damaged, and some have been maimed and killed by elephants that have strayed out of the park in search of food and water. The Earth Ranger software tracking tool has a virtual geofence marking the boundary of the national park.
From this dashboard, people here can see when elephants are encroaching into human settlements so they can warn those communities to take necessary precautions.
We try to identify youths who are still very energetic, who are also literate, who can also perform some of the demanding roles of patrolling around the buffer zone areas where the boundaries of the protected areas and where the communal land starts. And we've provided the basic equipment, the basic knowledge for them to understand and appreciate behavior of problem wildlife species like elephants, like lions.
Mitigating human-wildlife conflicts has become a top priority given the overpopulation of elephants. Wange National Park is home to 45,000 jumbos, three times more than its capacity. Authorities say the collars have aided other conservation efforts.
And it also helps us even to detect things like poaching. If the elephant is no longer moving, it means researchers can easily detect that it has stopped for quite a long period and becomes a concern.
Zimbabwe has recently registered progress in anti-poaching efforts, success it hopes to extend to reducing human-wildlife conflict. Farai Mwakutuya, CGTN, Harare, Zimbabwe.
Africa's tech leaders meet in Tanzania to shape digital policy.
At the heart of Tanzania's bustling commercial capital, over 1,000 stakeholders from policymakers to grassroots activists are shaping Africa's digital roadmap. This year's Africa Internet Governance Forum comes as the continent faces a critical juncture. Internet penetration lags at 43%, compared to Europeans, 92%. While cybercrime costs African economies an estimated $4 billion annually.
Through dialogues, partnership, and shared technical ambitions, we are laying the foundations for more inclusive, secure, and sustainable digital future for our continent.
Youth voices are front and center, with 65% of Africa's population under the age of 30. Women comprise just 30% of tech sector professionals, and rural connectivity gaps threaten to widen inequality. Right now, over 40% of Africans remain offline, but this forum could change that. With debates on affordable access, local content, and infrastructure sharing, the AFIGF isn't just talking connectivity. It's plotting on how to make it a reality for villages, schools, and SMEs still waiting in the dark. Tanzania, hosting for the first time, mirrors this push. Its digital economy strategy aims to boost GDP by $5 billion by 2025. But challenges loom. Disinformation campaigns surge during elections, and only 12 African nations have comprehensive data protection laws.
Let us allow freedoms, but also let us deal with disinformation, misinformation, and malinformation to ensure that its impact and effect on rights is actually curbed so that we are able to protect the rights.
As the summit draws to a close on Saturday, all eyes are on the anticipated action plan and its potential to mobilize the $100 billion required to achieve connectivity across Africa by 2030. The current atmosphere reflects a continent resolute in shaping its digital future. Daniel Kijo, CGTN, Dar es Salaam.
Conservative Karol Nawrocki has been elected Poland's new president.
Poland, which has just held its pivotal presidential election, with all votes now counted, the right-wing historian Karol Nawrocki is Poland's new president. The result is a major setback for the Prime Minister Donald Tusk's pro-EU government. The State Electoral Commission said that Mr. Nawrocki won 50.89% ahead of Warsaw's Liberal Mayor Rafał Trzaskowski on 49.11%. For more on this, let's speak to our correspondent who's in Warsaw for us, Adam Easton. Hello there to you, Adam. So this is a clear win then. There are no question marks about how tight it is or anything like that.
It's an official result. The National Electoral Commission has just in the last few minutes confirmed that percentage, that lead by 1.7 percentage victory, percentage points victory for Poland's right-wing historian Karol Nawrocki. He will become Poland's new president. As you say, that's important because although the office is largely ceremonial, he does have a veto on legislation. And during the 18 months that the pro-EU Prime Minister Donald Tusk has been in power, he has been stymied by the current incumbent Conservative President Andrzej Duda, who's blocked him in delivering many of his key campaign promises, such as liberalizing the country's very strict abortion law, depoliticizing the judiciary. So Mr. Nawrocki will continue to block Mr. Tusk's pro-EU program, and his victory will also re-energize his supporters, Poland's main opposition, Law and Justice, Conservative opposition, who will now see that they are on their way to a return to power after 18 months when they were voted out. And parliamentary elections are not until 2027, but they will certainly see that they are now in the ascendancy, and Poland will be turning towards a more conservative right-wing politics rather than cementing its place in the European mainstream with strong relations with Germany and France.
Who is, what more can you tell us about Mr. Nawrocki? He's 42 years old. We've said he's an historian. What else can you add for us, Adam?
He's an historian because he's the head of the state National Commission.
And now we've come to the conclusion after this episode of On the Radar News Bulletin. Do stay tuned for the episode of Uncle Nana Dingy with Bernadette. From Indafa, happy juju is goodbye and have yourself a wonderful day.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Olum nangeshifa noa haraku shivifa oma kuroe kupitira mohoriki radio station ayo Eagle FM. Enyamukulo olongaha. Ninge kwa tafano na Monica kushikondosho ipindi konorahita tuimwe, heari imwe, ne heari, imwe imwe no hamano. That is 081-7147-116. Mwamberewa konorahita tu natu, mbali oheta tu vatatu, ne nola no natu. Ninge tumo emaila ku monica@eaglefm.com.na. Opomone oshijemo shiri nawa.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.